one of the reasons why is because we're so return focused. A mistake that we made with the custom suit business is we went straight for a return. If a dollar didn't turn into five, I'll just use that as an example, we didn't spend it. And because of that, we saw sales drop. And, you know, I talked to the previous owner about it and said, hey, you know, we're seeing this. Why? And he's like, well, yes, cross-device tracking is good. However, it doesn't capture everything. And mobile devices, think about who buys suits these days. And it's somebody with a mobile life.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
The kitchen is my domain. That was our deal.
I don't give a what the deal was. The deal has now changed. Either you stay or you go. It's up to you.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Okay, Chuck, in the last podcast episode that we had Mike Nunez on. He offered 9 very actionable tips on how to be a very good buyer, how to be a buyer that can win deals by having the right disposition. And I know you guys talked, you guys are friends. You live close to each other there in Florida and all that. So you guys are friends. So naturally, your conversations run long. But also, Mike's got a ton of content to share with us. And you guys got into a second episode. What can we expect from the second episode with Mike Nunez?
Yeah, so let's start off by saying if you haven't watched the first one or listened to it, make sure you do because it's going to lead into this. On this one, we talk about what are the types of things that he's looking for as a buyer, and you should be able to get some stuff out of that to help you figure out maybe some ideas for the types of things you're looking for. We also talk about there was like one tip that we gave that he gave to somebody at Rhodium Conference a year or two ago, and it gave that guy a 25% boost in his revenue like overnight. Wow. So that was a nice little tip takeaway there. And then at the end of the call, one of the things I always like to do is just ask for, you know, any special tools or things that he uses. So he gives a list of additional tools he uses. So great little bonus at the end.
Fantastic. Mike's a great guy. Super glad that he was able to come back on the podcast. Let's get right into it.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chuck Mullins here with Quiet Light Brokerage. And this is part two of a two-part segment with Mike Nunez. Welcome, Mike. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for being accepting of my long-windedness.
No, I think we had a lot of great stuff in the last one. If anybody didn't get a chance to watch it, you might want to go back and watch that one first. What do we end up on? Is 9 super secret tips?
I think we're on 9. Yeah, 9 super secrets.
Yeah, 8 or 9 super secret tips of how to be a great buyer, which Mike Nunez is a great buyer. Now we wanted to segue in, and Mike wanted to make sure that I let everybody know that he is wearing the same suit, but only because we're recording these back to back because the last one went pretty long. So you still look great, Mike. For anybody who didn't watch the last one, Mike purchased a custom tailored suit business from us. So this is probably why he's wearing the suit, because I've never seen him wear a suit before he had purchased that business. So he's definitely stepped up his wardrobe game since then. So today we wanted to talk about what you're looking for when you buy a business and maybe some of the lessons you've learned along the way. So again, maybe let's start off before we jump into that, just give a brief introduction for anybody who didn't watch the first part of the series about you.
Well, so I think it's important if you're listening to this one, you probably should listen to the first one first because it does set up a lot of the things that we're going to talk about here. But for those that just don't listen, I've been in internet marketing for about 20 years now. I spent most of it working for an agency or owning an agency. I worked for Google for 4 years in their paid search division. And so today I own a company called AffiliateManager.com that manages affiliate programs, as well as the Performance Company, which manages paid search for companies as well. So that's a super brief synopsis.
Perfect, perfect. So let's jump into what is it that you look for when you're buying a business? People come to me and they, Chuck, you know, like, what kind of business should I buy? And it's like, okay, well, what are your interests? What are you good at? So I think you probably, let me just let you tell it. What are you looking for?
Yeah. So I think it's important to say what I look and what I look for, or what we look for, because I do have a pretty solid team around me. But what we look for is going to be very different than what somebody else looks for. And so please take that with a grain of salt, everything that I'm going to say today. And I think it's important for everyone to just recognize, just be self-aware. What is it that you are incredibly good at? If you're good at sales, go find a company that has an incredible product and that you're, but they're bad at sales. And you plug yourself in and boom, you now have an incredible business overall. Or if you're fantastic at operations, go find a company that's selling like crazy, but their operations just can't help, can't keep up with all the offers, and plug yourself in there. And that's what's going to work. I like to say that real opportunity is at the intersection of two different expertise or two different types of expertise. So for me, it's online business and online marketing, and I'm not so great at everything else, right? So I'm not an operations person. I'm not a finance person. So I don't look for companies that are lacking in those areas. I look for companies that are strong in those areas, and that are, I don't want to say lacking, because I think that's potentially disrespectful to either the people that I've purchased businesses from or will in the future, but it's more where I see opportunity, where, you know, they wouldn't know unless they worked at Google for several years, or they wouldn't know unless they've been in online marketing for 20 years, or they never had an affiliate program. They never thought about it, and we're incredible at it. So plugging what we are really good at into things that maybe they've tried that they're above average at, because you have to be above average if you're going to own an online business, but they've spread themselves so thin that they couldn't be an expert at just one thing. Another nice side effect that I've seen with buying these businesses, some of the previous owners, they just worked so long and hard in the business that when you're so down in the weeds like that, it's hard to pull yourself out and kind of take a 40,000 foot view picture. When acquiring a company, it's almost a natural thing that happens along the way. And you start to say, okay, let me take a step back and look at this not so closely, so close that I can't tell exactly what this is and what's going on. And then as you start to peel that back and say, okay, this is something that the previous owner did. Is this something that I need to take over? Do I bring the value? The previous owner, either maybe they enjoyed it, maybe they liked it, or maybe they were really good at it, but I'm not. And so the answer there is, who else within the company can take that over? And I got to say, that's probably one of the biggest benefits of purchasing an online company, not only for the buyer, but for the seller, that they're able to peel themselves out. And all the while, that's the transition of, okay, these are the daily duties that this person does. And this is what, who can take that over? So the new buyer, so myself as an example, can go focus on what we're good at. So with that caveat to what it is that you're asking, some of the things that I look for, and I think another quick note on this, this is an ever-evolving list. Just because I've written this today doesn't mean that there's not more to come. Every time we go through a business, or every time actually we have a call, we run into an issue with a current business, I say, okay, that sounds like an opportunity that when we purchase the next business that we need to look at and say, can we help there? So some of these are super simple, and most listeners might say, oh, well, that's kind of common sense. Well, it's not always common sense. Somebody on this call is going to really, or somebody on this listening to this podcast is going to really benefit from it. So, but I list it because it's things that I want to make sure that I go and check every time that we're looking at a business. So, for example, we are, like I said, really good at online marketing, specifically affiliate marketing and paid search. So we'll go look, do they have an affiliate program? Are they overpaying? Are they not paying out commission based off of the influence that each affiliate had on that actual transaction? It's actually super interesting to see how much people overpay for things, and even more interesting to see where they're underpaying affiliates. So for example, affiliates, they're a business just like you, just like me, and they want to maximize their revenue for their inventory. a lot of people get stuck and they look, oh, my competitor pays 5% commission. That's what I'm going to go pay. But a really good affiliate is equivalent to an upper funnel paid search keyword, right? And if you're paying a 2-to-1 for an upper funnel paid search keyword, let's use my custom suit business. If I'm willing to get a 2-to-1 for for the keyword custom suits or men's custom suits, if I'm willing to take a 2-to-1 return on ad spend for that, I should be willing to pay an affiliate who is upper funnel, who's educating customers about me. I should be willing to pay them a 50% commission, right? Because they're upper funnel.
All right, so that makes a lot of sense to use something that you're, you know, that you do on a day-to-day basis with your main business to look to acquire a company. So can you give some examples of specifically what something you might look for is?
Sure. I'll give two examples, one of where we succeeded at this and one where we failed, but then use that failure to learn and regroup. So the first business that we acquired, we identified that there was a significant amount of overspend. It wasn't the previous owner's fault. They had hired an agency who was just, they were doing good. I would give them a 6 out of 10, right? So, but within 20, 30 minutes, we can evaluate a Google Ads account and say, we can save this account $10,000, $15,000 a month, right?
And here we're talking about like an AdWords account as opposed to affiliate stuff. So
correct. Yeah. A Google Ads account that maybe this ad, the Google Ads account is spending $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a month. And if we can look in there and say, we can save $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on this and still get the same level of sales based off of our expertise, we're adding $100,000 to $200,000 straight to the bottom line, straight to EBITDA, and we did exactly that. We actually just finished reviewing January through October, and we actually generated more sales than the same period last year, and we spent I think it was $160,000 less to do so in that period.
It just kind of goes against the thought of ad expenses are going up, right? There's more and more competition every day for ads. So people think that, but yet you're able to cut ad spend and make more money with it.
That's 100% correct. If you have to know what you're doing, there are very, very few good paid search companies out there. And I know because I used to work with a lot of them when I was at Google. Kevin, who's on our team, his job was to go out and train agencies on how to appropriately use Google AdWords. Pat, who's the mastermind on our team, has been doing Google paid search since Yahoo, right? Or since Yahoo started, before Google was in existence. So it's just such a level of expertise that we have on our team overall that we can go and then apply and get these level of savings overall. And again, it's straight to the bottom line, and we take that money. The first acquisition was partly done via an SBA loan. And the savings that we've got doesn't quite cover the SBA loan, but it's about 75% of it. It's almost like we acquired the company for the price of the down payment, and a much smaller SBA loan, so to speak. Yep. So that's got to be our number one criteria. Same thing with an affiliate program. Again, with the first acquisition, they weren't doing attribution based commissioning. It was a smaller effect on the overall business. We probably saved somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 for the entire year on that one. So it's, again, it's much smaller effect, but that's a part-time person. That's an initiative that we can go fund now because we're saving 30,000 to 40,000 that we wouldn't have to spend otherwise.
So let's call out specifically there what it is you're looking for. So Mike looks at a company, requests access to their ad account, and then Mike looks for what?
So in their ad account, looking at, are they using negative keywords appropriately? What bidding algorithm are they using on Google? Matching types are they using? Are they using segmentation correctly? And this is all super 40,000 foot level things. But as Pat, our behind the scenes mastermind, likes to say, a poorly run paid search program is typically death by a thousand paper cuts. It's not one of these things. It's a thousand of these things that we meticulously go and identify, find, correct, and improve.
All right. So you will go into an account. You see all these things. They're doing everything right. Does that mean, okay, it's a great company. I'm not looking to buy this one. Like, are you specifically, if there's not something you can fix, you're not going to acquire it?
So, yeah, that's a fun question. The good news is, for me at least, I've never seen one that's that good. And to be fair, I've seen when we are getting an RFP in for the agency business, I've seen two or three that were so well run that we tell them, we can't help. They're doing an amazing job. You're going to look to us for growth in 3 or 4 months, and we're not going to deliver because your current company is doing fantastic. So don't leave them. But when acquiring a business and through some in the research that I do before making an offer, I have not yet come across that. If that were the case, yes, it's not the kiss of death, but it is a factor in whether or not we feel like we should purchase the business, because we know that there's so many out there that do it so poorly. You know, investing, I know I'm not teaching anybody on the call anything new with this, but investing is where's the next best place to spend your dollar. And if they're doing a bad job with paid search, that's a good place for me to spend my dollar, because I know we can fix that. If they're doing an incredible job, well, there's probably a better place for me to go spend my dollar.
Sure. And I don't think it's a negative thing for you to say, nope, I'm just going to move on to the next one if they're doing everything right. Like, yeah, you're looking for specific things,
yep,
in order to want to acquire it. And like you said, like, you've only got so many dollars to spend. You need to place it where it's going to do the most good for you. And if somebody else is doing everything right, like, that's not your area of expertise to grow the business. Maybe, again, they're not doing sales well, and that's not what you're specifically looking at. So sales is where the person that, you know, that is going to end up ultimately acquiring the business is good at. And there's also people who maybe they don't have necessarily an expertise at something, and they're just looking for an overall good run business that can keep chugging away for the years to come. And that's not a negative, right? Like, just because you don't have some really specialized thing that you're good at doesn't mean that buying a business would necessarily be a bad idea for you.
Yeah, it's one of those things, begin with the end in mind, right? And if your end goal is that you want a super stable business, but it's not going to grow because everything is so well optimized and you're willing to pay the same multiple for it, and you just want to kind of run that business day to day as is without expectation of growth, then that's it. And there are people that want that. I would even consider a business like that if it was a strictly almost a lifestyle business. But the businesses that we're buying, our goal, our intention is to take this $15 million company and turn it into a $25, $50, $100 million company. And so there has to be opportunity when we're purchasing. And the bigger the opportunity that we identify that we can do so fairly quickly with what we have, the more we're willing to pay for it. Right. And the more we're willing to compete for it overall.
So we were talking recently, we had lunch, and you said that you recently discovered something with one of your businesses that was something, I'm going to start looking for that. And it revolved around shipping. Do you remember what we were talking about?
Oh, yes, I have it. It's on my list. And that's funny. And that's yet another reason to have a list. Right.
Right.
And so as we're talking, like, I know I'm not alone in this, right? Like, I know you're like this, Chuck. I'm sure you, the person listening to this right now, is the same way. And I'll wake up in the middle of the night, and I feel like sometimes not thinking about things or telling yourself, think about this in the back of my mind, and you'll solve problems. Like, I'll get things out there just to solve them. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and be like, that's the answer to this. And I'll roll over, I'll pick up my phone, and I'll just type a note to myself and say, this is the answer to that, and I'll go back to sleep. And the one that you're talking about is we have a warehouse for both of the businesses, but the one that we're talking about now has a warehouse, a large warehouse, tens of thousands of square feet. I'm not sure exactly how big it is. But we were getting fined by the shipping company because the dimensions of our packaging was incorrect. And so as we printed out the shipping labels for it, it was off, maybe by an inch or whatever it was. And so as when we send it to FedEx, who was our shipping carrier, they would measure it. We would be off by however much, and they would actually fine us. And so it added up to tens of thousands of dollars in fines that we were receiving. Not shipping costs, fines, because our dimensions were wrong. And so for less than $10,000, we purchased a DIM scanner and basically eliminated that. That DIM scanner pays itself in 1 to 2 months. And then from that point forward, we now recover yet another, you know, $20,000-$30,000 back. So it's if you see the recurring theme here, you know, paid search, this is how much we can save by doing it better. Affiliate, this is how much we can save by doing it better. Shipping, this is how much we can save by doing it better. Then here's the freaking key. Like this is the thing though. Don't just sit on that, right? If you just rest back. And again, I guess this depends on your goal. If your goal is to just absolute squeeze every penny out of these companies that you want, then go and do it. My goal is growth and to turn these companies into large companies so that one day I may list with Chuck and get a great multiple on these companies. But take those dollars that you're taking and now do all of the things on the list of in that plan and the things that the previous owner said, I could never afford, I could never get to, I could never pay somebody to do it. Now you found the funds to go and actually do those things, right? Use that money to fund that growth. I'll refer to Pat who runs our paid search. He calls that feed the winners, starve the losers. So just taking the wasted money and putting it back in to reinvest on growth and winning.
So with the shipping fines that you discovered, how long have you been running this business? It's been a year and a half?
Year and a half, yeah.
Year and a half, and you just discovered it now. Is this something that you having, we don't know what we don't know, right? So we don't know what to look for. Is this something that you could have identified on day one to have seen even more value?
Yeah. Thanks for pointing it out, Chuck. it's always painful, you know, to look back and say, oh, we could have made an additional, you know, 30 to 50 grand, you know, in the last 12 months if we just would have found this. But
so, and this is probably not a common problem, right? But it's something you're going to look for in the future. Where would they have identified that? What due diligence would you have done in order to have seen that?
Yeah, looking at the shipping invoices and seeing, you know, exactly what those are. And there are some pretty cool companies out there that will A, look at that for you, and B, they'll actually monitor your shipping and make sure that it arrives on time. There's one called Late Shipment is I think the one that we use, lateshipment.com. And if FedEx doesn't deliver within the agreed upon time, the 1 to 2 days, they'll actually refund. We get a refund on that shipping cost. So that's another example. If they're not using, if you send out $1 million, if you pay $1 million in shipping costs every year, and I think I know ours is above $1 million, but I'll just use that. So $1 million, if you can recoup 2-4%, you know, that's $20,000-$40,000 back in your pocket that just appeared out of nowhere. So that's another one on my list. So are they using a DIM scanner? Are they getting fined for this? Are they using lateshipment.com and getting a refund on anything that's late? Again, stacking up this $160,000 in savings in paid search, $40,000 in savings in affiliate, $30,000 to $50,000 in DIM scanner, late shipment, another $30,000 to $40,000, just stacking and stacking and stacking. Another one is credit card fees. Are they using a good credit card process? Have they negotiated their rates since they grew from zero to $15 million in sales? And if they haven't, that's an opportunity. Like just a one or two, what do they call them? BIPs, I think is what they call them. But could mean a huge difference in your overall company. Just one or two BIPs is $15,000 to $30,000 on a $15 million business.
Yep. And so in your defense, I think on the shipping thing, the company that you purchased did have one of those companies in place that were looking at the delayed shipments, but that company wasn't looking at the the penalties you were receiving. So
that's right.
Even if somebody is using a company that is monitoring the late shipping and getting those refunds, they may not be looking at the fees, which is strange. You'd think they'd be doing it, but they weren't. Something I've heard you say at conferences when we're looking at it from a different type of business, right? So right now we're kind of talking about e-commerce, but you also work with people who are doing content sites, and they're affiliates of other people. So what's your number one tip if you've purchased a content site that makes money off affiliates? What's your number one tip for those people?
Go ask for a raise.
What does that mean?
Go to the affiliate management, either the advertiser or the affiliate management company who's managing them, and say, I want to make more. And there's many ways that you can position that. One is, if you're a content site, just know that, you know, my affiliate company, affiliatemanager.com, is always looking for more content sites. We want to bring that value to our clients. And you are in a position, it's a content sites market. Let me put it that way. We all want what you have. And some make the mistake of, because they've been beat down and offered 1, 2, 3, 5, 10% commissions in the past, they just turn away affiliate marketing. Don't do that. You're leaving money on the table. If you find a good advertiser or a good affiliate management company that knows what they're doing, and they know that this content site is upper funnel and bringing incremental business to the table, they're going to be willing to pay for that. And they might pay 20%, 25%, 30%. One of our clients pays 100%. Another one pays up to $150 for an acquisition, and they might make, you know, a zero on it. So it's just one of those things where you have to go and be willing to ask for a raise. And again, a good affiliate management company, they're going to look at the incremental value. We not to get too much into us, because I know this is more about acquisition, but we actually have an attribution tool that we built, because it didn't exist, that shows where in the clickstream each of these sites are. And if it's a content site, going back to your point, and we look at their overall numbers, and, you know, 70% of the time, they're the first touch for anybody who's making a purchase on your site. Yes, we want that incremental traffic and sales coming from that content site. So to you content sites out there, you are in a position of desire. We all want to work with you more, and go and ask for raises. Somebody who recognizes your value is going to very much be willing to pay it. And if they're not, go find somebody else. They're going to be willing to pay it. You are valuable.
And just to give an example of something like that, I've got a number of content sites, and one of them, the affiliates that I was getting paid from is a Canadian company, and they send me a Canadian check. So every time I cash the Canadian check, I get hit with like a $10 or $20 cashing fee. And it's just like, it's just annoying, right? And it's a small amount of money, but it's annoying. So I emailed them and I said, hey, can you just like PayPal me the money, or wire me the money, or do something else? Because I don't want to get hit with a $10 fee every time I cash your check. They're like, oh, how about we just double what we pay you? Okay, that'll work. So they really are willing. If they see the value in what you're providing them, they are willing to pay more. So just a nice little tip there from Mike Nunez.
Yeah, and there was a guy, Greg, I won't say his last name, at Rhodium 1 year. And I said that at a table. And 1 year later, he came back and said, you buy that one tip that you just said, because he was a content site, or is a content site, I have grown my revenue by 25%. All I did, I didn't do anything else but go back and ask for a raise. And the revenue on my site grew 25%.
Amazing. Amazing.
Free. Yeah.
All right. So we've talked about shipping. We've talked about affiliate. We've talked about ads. Is there anything else specifically that you're looking for when you're acquiring?
Yeah. If they're not on Amazon, I think that's a pretty obvious one. If they are on Amazon and either doing a poor job or no job at Amazon ads. Amazon ads is probably the biggest opportunity right now for everyone that sells on Amazon.
And this is kind of new to you in the last couple of years, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it didn't really exist a couple of years ago, or it was very nascent. So it's still one of those things, like if you remember Google back in the day when, you know, clicks used to be available for a penny or 5 cents and such.
Yeah, man. They sent me a refrigerator. I had spent so much money. I got a Google refrigerator.
So I'm not saying that clicks are available for a penny on Amazon, but if you incorporate the right system in how to manage it, you can gross it. Like I'll give you physical numbers year over year in November. Even though Cyber Monday fell outside of November this year, we grew Amazon sales on that outdoor brand by 50% using Amazon ads. So it's another example of having expertise in this paid search world and finding opportunities within it. And Amazon ads, I think maybe that's super secret number 10. I think we've gotten away from the super secrets, but maybe super secret number 10. And it's probably one of the most powerful ones I see right now available for people.
So what else are you looking for?
So besides being on Amazon and Amazon ads, me personally, I'm looking for a strong operational foundation because I'm not an expert at that, not good at that. Thankfully, the businesses that I purchased have that. I'm looking for a barrier to entry. Like, how replicatable is this business? And what is the barrier that people have to get through? And this is a little bit less quantifiable, but this is just a general, do I want to be involved in this business? How hard is it for somebody who's just as good at paid search as me or Amazon or whatever? If they just got a hold of my supplier, could they replicate this? And do I want that? And if the answer is it's too easy, then I move on. Is it a learnable industry? One of the things I was worried about with the custom suit company was maybe before purchasing it, I wasn't as sharp a dresser, Chuck. My wardrobe might have consisted of free conference t-shirts, but I was worried about that. And
you were pulling it off still.
Thank you. and once I got into it, I learned, no, this is a learnable industry. I can do this. And it's worked great since then. Is it Amazon resistant? And I know that's a little counter to saying, are they on Amazon? Is Amazon going to move into that space? Are they going to want to replicate what it is that you're doing? And on the outdoor brand, it's more of a, we joined them, so we are, we couldn't beat them, so we joined them, right? And a good 50, 60% of our sales are on Amazon on that brand. On the suit brand, we're looking to sell, you know, accessories, expand our brand awareness, because you can't sell custom suits on Amazon, right? And it's unlikely that Amazon's going to get into that realm. So we're thinking, how can we use Amazon to expand our brand awareness, generate some confidence in the brand, yet not have to, or since we're not able to send custom suits and sell custom suits on Amazon directly. So is Amazon a threat to the business? Is something that we look at overall. Inventory management optimization. So leveraging just-in-time inventory. Because anybody that's involved in an inventory-based business knows that a lot of times your profit can go straight back into purchasing additional inventory. And if you want to realize any profits before you sell the business, you've got to have inventory optimization. Is the current ownership leveraging that inventory optimization? Are there conversion rate optimization opportunities? Have they ever even tried it before? I just had a call today for the suit company, and this is going to be ultra specific, but it is an indicator of what we've done. We launched a new cart in early November, and we just ran the numbers and we had on desktop for new customers, we have doubled our conversion rate, which anybody knows the lifeblood of a business is acquiring new customers. So to do that is pretty amazing. Now on mobile, it was pretty static, but we've also generated significantly amounts of more traffic on mobile to our, to the suit company. So that's a little bit misleading to say that it's exactly the same. Well, anybody who knows conversion rate optimization and knows how traffic works, if you increase traffic, the quality is potentially a little bit lower. And so the fact that we slightly beat our previous conversion rate on mobile is a huge win, right? So are there conversion rate optimization opportunities in the acquisition? What is the, here's one that you know is near and dear to my heart, Chuck. What is the current platform? Are they on NetSuite, on Shopify, on Magento? Because the one thing I never, ever, 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 ever recommend is changing platforms. So can you accomplish all of the things on your list that you want to do on the platform? We use NetSuite as one of them, and it is extremely difficult to get changes done. But we are not moving. So it's just something that I think everybody should really consider. Or are you on an archaic platform, like a Yahoo Stores, right? Something that's not being updated anymore. And there's 7 people in the world that can code to Yahoo Stores. Now you're beholden to them. You have to pay exorbitant rates for their development because they're the only one that knows it. Right, as opposed to a Shopify or a Magento, that you know developers are plenty.
If you're on Yahoo, shout out to Rob Snell. Look him up if you need help with your Yahoo business.
There we go. See, I didn't even mean that. That's that helps. and I think the last thing us particularly we enjoy. Custom products. So custom made suits is a really good example. Or even for the branded products, things that other people make, turning them into custom products. We really think that that's a good market to be in. Again, slightly more defensible against an Amazon. And then finally, this is my last on my company acquisition algorithm that I'll share today. Just I know we're limited on time. Is what synergies can you participate in? So if you listen to the last call, you heard me talking about a brand that we made an offer on that it was a full price offer, quick close, no due diligence because it was a trusted brand. Before Chuck chimes in, he recommends that you never do that. But the reason why we wanted that brand is because it was geared towards outdoor enthusiasts. And we have, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of outdoor enthusiasts that come to our website every day. So looking for synergistic brands that are out there to acquire and diversify, you know, the income. And now not only sell other people's brands, but also sell your own brand. White labeling, things like that, finding things with opportunities like that. That's the last opportunity that we're looking for in our algorithm.
Awesome. All right. So now let's maybe move into what are some of the lessons you've learned from the various acquisitions you've done. And you had acquired some stuff before Quiet Light as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot of them are listed on what I just said, but I will say there's, because every time I learn a lesson, to me, it's an opportunity for the next acquisition. So again, you know, I will buy another business on NetSuite, but I wouldn't have bought the first one knowing what I know now about NetSuite. But now that we've had to learn it, now that we've had to, our developer is familiar with it now and can make the changes that we need and want. Now I'll buy another one. And so to me, there's opportunity there, right? It's harder for people to do that than it is for me. It's yet another level of expertise. So that's one thing is a lot of the lessons are kind of listed already in that. But there's one I would say recently, and again, it's with the custom suit business. Don't get so caught up in your own expertise. Again, we are really, really good at paid search. And one of the reasons why is because we're so return focused. A mistake that we made with the custom suit business is we went straight for a return. If a dollar didn't turn into five, I'll just use that as an example, we didn't spend it. And because of that, we saw sales drop. And, you know, I talked to the previous owner about it and said, hey, you know, we're seeing this. Why? And he's like, well, yes, cross-device tracking is good. However, it doesn't capture everything. And mobile devices, think about who buys suits these days. And it's somebody with a mobile life. It's a lawyer that's always in the courtroom. It's a doctor that's always walking about. It's a financial person that's not necessarily sitting at their desk. They're going to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. And where are they searching up for their next suit? Well, it's probably their mobile device. Then they find it, and then they go on the desktop, and they go and they purchase it. And we had pulled back pretty significantly on the mobile spend because the conversion rate just wasn't as good, right? And so that's one example of us kind of getting in our own way. But to our credit, we were able to kind of step back and say, okay, we learned a lesson here. Let's get better at it and change our approach. And since then, that's when we now had, you know, some of our best days that we've ever had. So I like to think of it as a lot of these owners, the previous owners, they had levels of expertise. They were doing something right. And so it's our job as experts that are better at it to take the lessons that they've learned and apply our expertise to it to just throw some gasoline on it.
All right, Mike. So one of the ways I like to usually end these things is just to ask if you have any kind of tools that you use on a regular basis, just some things that could either help with productivity, could even be outside of, you know, outside of work. One example, the other day, I was kind of upset about it because you ordered the chicken sandwich from Popeyes through Uber Eats so that you didn't have to wait in line and you didn't bother sending me one. Like, that's a great little life hack. So what else do you have? You have any tools that you might recommend or any other little things?
I did the same thing with Amazon 2 years ago when they were offering like the 1 hour delivery and we had a hurricane come into Florida and I just ordered all the bottled water and had it delivered while everybody else is fighting each other at the store. But now that secret's out. That's no longer an advantage. But yeah, so some tools that I like that we use. So for Google Ads, I'll say if you're using things like Maximize for Clicks Run, we prefer an enhanced CPC bidding algorithm or a target CPA. We'll always test to see which one's better. Prioritization, I love Airtable. Got to give a shout out to my biz partner, Daniel, for that. Airtable is a prioritization tool. And basically, you can help identify what is the easiest to implement, yet the most impactful change that you can make. And so it just really helps to prioritize what it is that you're doing and the changes that you're making to the company, because obviously we all want to make the biggest impact as quickly as possible. I love Grammarly for sending emails so that I'm not, I don't sound silly.
That one saves me all the time.
It's so good. I haven't used their pro version, but even just the regular version is fantastic. For either the affiliate management company, I got to give a shout out to Mailshake. We love Mailshake. We use that very often. It's a terrific tool. I love Moz. So the Moz toolbar is something that I use a lot. And then I think we use a lot of the things everybody else uses, like the Evernotes and you know, Google Apps and things like that. So I think those, the first ones though, were probably some of them others may not have heard of.
Awesome. Well, I think everybody who's been listening appreciates your time. Love to have you back at another time. We can talk about some more stuff once you've hit that next goal of purchase through us. We'll talk about that one. But again, thank you for the time today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chuck.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.